She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And always remember, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are going to have so many wonderful things to gift you with for thinking about today. We have a wonderful guest that's joining us for this hour. Her name is Osprey Oriel Lake. She is the author of Uprisings for the Earth, Reconnecting Culture with Nature. It's just one of her many accomplishments, this book. We'll be talking about some of her other ones, and I hope we have lots of time to share this information about the very powerful work that Osprey is doing that impacts all of our lives. So, Osprey, welcome, and thank you for taking the time to be a part of Mrs. Green's World.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
It's going to be great, and I will do a few quick announcements, and then we will be on with the show. Mrs. Green's World is indeed a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, where my shows can be heard every Monday and Tuesday at dreamvision7radio.com. And as of March 7th, you can also listen to my shows on Castle Rock Radio in the Colorado area, which can be accessed by castlerockradio.com. Please check them out when you can. Lots of exciting things happening in Mrs. Green's World. We are here every Saturday at noon, Arizona time, MrsGreensWorld.com, and invite you to stay connected with us through Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and blah, blah, blah. There are so many social media abilities to access information about my mission, which is getting people to think and not telling them how to think. You can listen to my show from your iPhone or Droid. And if you are not able to catch the show at noon on Saturday, the podcasts live on my website for your listening pleasure in your time, and you needlessly not worry about not going at noon. You can always go in your own time, www.mrsgreensworld.com. And now a shout out about one of our national sponsors, Echo Bella. And as I have said on this show many times before, if your skin care and makeup products have warning labels on them about what to do if swallowed, or there's a long list of ingredients you cannot pronounce, I can make it very simple for you. Think about making a switch. The founder and CEO of Echo Bella, Sally Malenga, is another example of outstanding women's leadership working diligently for a more sustainable, healthier planet. She is an early adopter, and her company is all that. And if you like what you see, when you visit EcoBella with 2Cs.com, please enter the code Mrs. Green at checkout, and you get a 10% discount for your purchase, and I've got to love that. So let's go on with the show, and I'm going to do some things a little bit differently, Osprey. What I'd like to do is just share with people my deepest thoughts about this interview, and it'll take a little bit of your time, but I hope it's okay with you.
Absolutely, please.
Okay, so I have now interviewed well over 250 people from around the country on almost every topic imaginable that you can think of related to a sustainable planet. And if you have been a part of my world for any time whatsoever, you know that I've enjoyed and learned from every single one of my guests. It's a journey of expansion and learning and pushing myself to the limit in terms of what my brain capacity is. Well, this time, I want to be sure that I make it very clear that this guest, this time, for this show has changed my life forever. I believe that her book, Uprisings for the Earth, Reconnecting Culture with Nature, is truly a key to preserving the planet. And you can go back and listen to every one of my shows, and you will not be able to quote me on that because I've only said it once. I believe that her book can lead us to find ways to shift things in time. And I think the clock is ticking. Everybody knows that I say that. And to move all of us in a direction that will, in fact, preserve this magnificent planet of ours, regardless of whether you are an agent for social or environmental or political change, or just a lover of nature. This show, this book, this message is for all of us. So that's my heartfelt introduction to you, Ms. Osprey Ariel Lake, and you can tell the impact that you've had on my life, and it will be a lasting one. So welcome to our show.
Oh my goodness, what an introduction. Thank you. I'm deeply touched. Thank you so much.
And probably at some level, you know that this is a recognition of the work that you've been called to do, that you wrote it and that people are supposed to listen to it and that we connected because I'm going to help other people connect with it.
Oh, I really honor that, and I thank you so much. And yeah, it was just, you know, the book is really a culmination of so many years of my thoughts, but also, you know, many people that I've met who've inspired me. You know, I think we're all connected in this together, really trying to figure out what are we going to do at this critical juncture of human civilization.
That is so right. And I think that what I want to do is read one paragraph, just two throughout the show, because it's a great way to launch the big concept for the book. And it's a very short paragraph. And I read it and I called about five friends and said, this is it, guys, this is it. The big quiet invites us to be present with ourselves and our place wherever we are, and to include the entire Earth community, down to the smallest of plants and animals, in our conversation. This is not a romantic concept. On the contrary, it is one of vital importance to our survival as a species. That is the "she had me from hello" paragraph. So will you expand on that for all of our listeners, the whole concept of the big quiet?
Sure, sure. It's the opening chapter in the book, and really what I'm doing is I'm exploring how can we revitalize a deeper relationship with our living Earth, both from a sensate experience of connecting with the land, but also how we tell our cultural narrative in relationship to the natural world. And those are the big concepts I'm working with. And within this context, one of the things that I see is that, you know, right now over half of the world's population lives in urban environments, which means most of us are very disconnected from the very earth that sustains us and gives us life, you know, disconnected from our watersheds, where our food comes from. We could go on and on. So I'm really asking, you know, questions about how can we care for the rivers, our forests, our mountains, and other species when we have so little connection to them most often? And, you know, how do we live in a good relationship to the natural laws when we have very little experience of them? And I think this is something that we're, you know, we've come to this point in time and space that we've really got to address this disconnect and do something about it. And I think that one of the, you know, big results is we're facing a huge crossroads right now as a species with climate change and other environmental degradation and huge social injustices. And we're not on a good path, and we have a short window, in my opinion, to change course before we really meet some catastrophic consequences. You know, I work a lot, especially in the field of climate change. So in my book, in this first chapter, I'm, you know, getting into the root causes, because I think underneath a lot of these symptoms that we're seeing of environmental degradation, it's, you know, why are we so out of touch? Why are we living this way? You know, where is our better nature as human beings? And I think a big thing that we need to do is to listen. And in the first chapter, I'm talking a lot about, you know, our listening skills and getting back into rhythm with the natural cycles. And we can get so busy on our cell phones and our computers and our schedules and just this very top-heavy culture and top-heavy way of living at such speeds that some of the more, you know, deeply rooted experiences of, you know, sitting outside, you know, drinking a cup of coffee and watching the birds go by in the morning is just thrown out the window as trivial. And I think it turns out those things are not trivial, that we really need to deepen our love and care for the earth, and we'll start living differently. I think it's like anything. If you don't know about the trees and the forests and your bioregion and your rivers, it's very hard to care for them. So I'm talking a lot in this first chapter about listening to the land and taking that time also for our inward journey, as well as all the things that we do in our daily lives.
And you point out that no matter where you live, no matter how urban the dwelling, no matter how dense the population, everywhere has a park or a tree or a bird. There's something there to connect. And it's so funny. Today I was running up here to get in the studio and get ready. And then I thought, this is so counterintuitive to what your book actually guides us to do. And my husband was looking at a beautiful big hawk in our fountain in the backyard. And I stopped. I said, okay, don't run up the stairs. I stopped. I went outside. It's the closest the hawk has ever let me get to him. And
wow.
He was taking a bath. And I thought, so I have learned from your book to apply the big quiet. I just got quiet. And it was the magical imprint that you're talking about. And I want to really emphasize, it's not a woo-woo romantic concept. It's a survival theory or belief. To me, it's like, this is not something you have to be, you know, kind of living on the edginess thought. It's about how do we preserve the planet in easy, meaningful ways and get ourselves quiet. Now, what about the people that are in the city? Give us some ideas that you shared in the book for how they can access the big quiet if they can't go to the ocean or there isn't a river near them. Just little ideas, because people like, tell me what to do because I want to do this.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. And I think it's a big challenge for all of us. You know, one thing I wanted to mention, because it's something that really struck me, is that environmentalist Paul Hawken cites a really important example that if you ask children or adults to name literally hundreds and hundreds of, to identify hundreds and hundreds of logos or brand names, they can just look at, you know, some logo from a commercial product, they have no problem identifying what those are, hundreds of them. But if you ask them to go outside the front door of their house and just name 10, 5 species of plants or trees right in their neighborhood, people cannot do that. And I think that's really amazing.
That's,
you know, we
really
understand
scary,
all these,
but it's true.
It's true. It's true. So, you know, talking about something very practical, I think one of the things we can do is just literally start right out our front door and see, you know, what trees are in our neighborhood. If there's grass right outside in our front lawns, if there's birds flying by, actually taking the time to go to the library and do some research and find out, you know, who do I live with right now that's not human? Who is living here with me right in my own neighborhood? I think this is a wonderful thing to do because it gets us rooted in place. A big part of this cultural transition that we're discussing is, you know, how do we change our narrative with the earth? And part of that is learning the story of the earth right around us, the story of the trees, the story of the plants and animals, even if we're in an urban environment. And we can go to our local parks, you know, go to the local city park and do the same thing and really begin to study what's happening there. Maybe go 4 times a year in the 4 different seasons to see what's happening with the trees and the animals in the park as we go through the different seasons. So I think it's a lot about something, I love the term eco-literacy, which is, you know, becoming literate about our ecosystems and our bioregions. Another project that I'm involved in that I'm very excited about, as you know, I also do some artwork, is that I think it's important to also learn where our water comes from. We can do this in urban environments. We can do research to find out where does our local water come from. And I began to do this art project in our region. I live in California in Marin County, where we have the Mount Tamalpais watershed. And I'm beginning to design a fountain that's based on a photographic image of a water crystal from our local waterway here. So I went on a journey and found out, you know, where does my water come from? I went up to some of the lakes that are the reservoir for our Mount Tamalpais watershed, and I collected a water sample. I found a scientist who could basically, through a process of freezing the water, create a water crystal, and it's gorgeous. It looks like a snowflake. It's just stunning. And then I'm in the process right now of designing a water fountain based on the exact crystallized form of the water that we drink here from our watershed. And of course, if you went to any watershed, those crystalline forms would look different because each region has, you know, would have its own sort of iconic image
right,
of the water coming
right.
from
fingerprint
there.
Almost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, the whole point of this is, you know, to, I'm looking to develop a fountain, in one of the local cities here so that people can connect with and say, wow, that's what my water looks like. That's when I turn on my faucets, you know, and, you know, wash my dishes. That's what my water looks like. And creating a personal relationship with the water, with our bioregion, with the watershed, and there'll be little placards around the fountain that describe the watershed and how we can care for the waterway. You know, this is just one example. It's a little bit elaborate, but my point is, you know, any of us in any urban environment can find out where water comes from, learn about the watershed, and begin to build these relationships because it's all about building a relationship with the land, with the plants, the animals, the waters, the local forests, and seeing what we can do to really deepen that, and again, that sense of the more that we know about something, the more we can care for it.
And the part of it that extends to kids, I see a lot of hope and possibility and change in the area of connecting kids to where their food comes from. We've got a really very green community, very active community here in Tucson, which is, it inspires me. And we have, you know, the Tucson Village Farm School that, sees 800 to 900 kids every week from, schools around. It's like, this is where a carrot comes from. Somebody tried to stump me the other day and say, do you know what you plant carrots from? And I said, yeah, a seed. And that was the right answer. They thought they were going to stump me because they thought maybe I'd say a carrot bowl. But I said, no, it comes from seed. And so it's putting your hands in the dirt. It's being outside, just that, instead of inside with a Game Boy or whatever those devices are. And that's one of the things about your book that was like screaming out, when I am feeling the disconnect, where do I go to get that to refill me to keep on doing the work that I'm doing? For everybody's sake. It's for sanity's sake to me and connected to the planet. So let's talk a little bit about, there's really a part of your book, there's a whole chapter that I happen to embrace and I believe is important about honoring women. And you quote Susan B. Anthony, and I actually will read another quote, but it's, the day will come when man will recognize woman as his peer, not only at the fireside, but in councils of the nation. Then, and not until then, will there be the perfect comradeship, the ideal union between the sexes that shall result in the highest development of the race. Now, Susan B. Anthony, and from your perspective, where are we on that report card? If I may say that, how are we doing? Are things getting better? You're a global traveler. You intersect with the 13 grandmothers and people in Washington, D.C. Is it shifting in a way that we should all celebrate?
Well, I think that there's pluses and minuses. I don't think it's a clear-cut response. There's definitely improvements, and there's a long ways to go. I really like the quote that you read. I often use it, actually, because I think the part about the highest development of the human race is very potent because it really speaks to the fact that we're out of balance right now and that we need to, if we're really going to, in my opinion, survive and live on this earth in a good way, we must have this balance between women and men, between the feminine and the masculine, and we're not there. So I think we come up short there, and I think that it's we see symptoms of this in the fact of also how we're treating nature. I think that there's a long historical interrelationship between how we treat women and how we treat the earth, and that we've been living this way for a very long time in our modern societies, and we've come to a point where we have to, at a very, very systemic level, change how we are treating women and the earth. And the violations against both are very, very similar. And that dominator, if you will, perspective of society, of dominion over women, dominion over nature, dominion over indigenous peoples, or you know, the sense of also the way we see racism expressed in domination, colonialism, has really got to stop. It clearly, it's not working for us or the planet. And so I think, you know, that part of the report card is we've improved, but we also have a long ways to go. And I think it's a tremendous part of our healing and our quest at this time to move away into what I like to use the term partnership models of society. This is a terminology that comes from Rianne Eisler. She's just a wonderful, wonderful elder, a mentor of mine. And she uses the term, you know, moving from a dominator to a partnership model of society. And I think that's something we're really striving to do.
And I think it's, I love the word partnership. And even in the work that I'm doing with local and national partners, when someone says, well, give me a rate sheet, I'm like, no, I don't have a rate sheet. I build partnerships. What are you looking for? How can we help expand on your message to further benefit the planet? So I love the word partnership. We are going to have to take a short break. I told you that time would fly. When we come back, I would like to talk to Osprey about a little bit more about her book, about the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus, and about some really exciting things, including the interactive online portal, which is about to be launched as we speak. Please stay here with me. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. You can always access me by mrsgreensworld.com. Please stay here with me. I am interviewing Osprey Arielle Lake, author of Uprisings for the Earth, Reconnecting Culture with Nature. We'll be right back.
Can you predict the future? The reality is we can't, but we can be ready for it. Funded by the National Science Foundation, researchers at the University of Arizona are working on a $3 million project to study the monsoon and learn about our changing desert weather, climate, and ecology. Such knowledge will help guide us to a more sustainable future, not just for our desert, but for the world. Now that's thinking ahead. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some exciting news. The all-new 2013 Honda Accord is here. It's got a new level of sophistication. It's an efficiency expert, and when you drive one, you can discover how EcoAssist can help you increase your fuel efficiency. For a record 26th time, the Honda Accord has been named to Car and Driver's esteemed 10 Best list. To check them out, visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street. They have a great selection of 2013 Accords in stock right now.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are giving you lots to think about today, I certainly believe. I want to mention that this show is sponsored by Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona, where their business is changing lives, and indeed they do, not just in Tucson, Arizona, but Goodwill changes lives all over the United States by the programs that they do to help support at-risk populations. So thank you, Goodwill, for your support of Mrs. Green's World. Our guest today is Osprey Arielle Lake, who is the author of Uprisings for the Earth, Reconnecting Culture with Nature. This is just one of her many accomplishments, as I said earlier on the show. So Osprey, let's talk a little bit more about the book. And we really never, it's like we talked about the big quiet and the important role that women play for the great planetary shift that I too believe has to happen, of it being more in balance. It's not about women taking over, but let's bring back the balance of the masculine and the feminine. It's a much healthier place for the planet. What inspired you to put these thoughts in this book at this time?
Well, I really think that one of the things that I was working with in the themes of my book is that a culture or a society that doesn't have its foundation in nature by following the natural laws and understanding the natural rhythms of the earth is not sustainable. And it just seems like such sort of a simple thought, but it's one that really profoundly touched me when I began to think about it, is, you know, how in the world do we think we can live sustainably or live well with each other, caring for each other and the earth, if we don't stay grounded within the natural laws, meaning, you know, the earth's natural carrying capacity for how many people can live on the planet, you know, how much, you know, pollution can you dump in the river, you know, how can we create all these products that are damaging to the ecosystem, on and on, our, you know, top-heavy culture, as we were talking about earlier, where we just, you know, consume so much.
Consume.
Yeah,
and think there's unlimited supply.
Yeah, just, you know, and we have these economic models that are based on endless growth. You know, you just can't keep growing and consuming and growing and consuming. It's not how nature teaches us. So, you know, this is something deeply at the core of bringing all these concepts together in the book. I really also love the work of a woman named Janine Benyus. You might have heard of her. She's a biologist who named an emerging science called biomimicry.
Yes.
And, yes, so, you know, that whole idea of, you know, how can we live by mimicking biology and nature? And I think this is an external effort, but also an internal one as well. It's both. And the more that we listen to the land and follow those rhythms, then we become living in concert with all the other creatures of this beautiful earth. And I think when we're living out of those rhythms, we become dangerous, not only to ourselves, but to the rest of creation. And so this is really at the heart of the concepts that brought the book together.
And then one of the quotes that I loved and I wanted to ask you about, you say that there is a knowledge resting in the subtle, undisturbed terrain of quietude, which is referring to the big quiet. Older cultures know of it, and we can each begin to renew this sensibility today. Can you explain that or expand on that just a little bit?
Sure. One of the things that I think is really important at this time is to have a deep respect and listening to indigenous peoples all over the world, because I think it's very important to understand that we at one time all came from indigenous cultures. That's very important to remember as well, our own historical roots in land-based cultures, whoever we happen to be. But somehow, you know, it's a much longer story than we can do on your show today, but, you know, modern society got very, very disconnected from, you know, a land-based understanding of life. And I think that we have so much to learn from intact indigenous peoples, because they are living in a way that respects their bioregions, that respects the earth. And a lot of those old wisdoms are still very intact in these cultures. And I think it behooves us to honor them, to listen to indigenous elders, to learn from their ways of life. And no, we can't replicate them and become them. That's you know, something that is, you know, inappropriate and not possible, but we certainly can learn and begin to change our own cultural narrative, to begin to model after societies and cultures that have really maintained what they call their original instructions with the earth. And I think those original instructions have so much to do with respecting the earth as a living being, respecting other life forms, and that this whole sense of our own listening to the land and indigenous peoples is a very important step we can take right now.
You know, I watched, I think, for 3 hours one night, the Human Genome Project that was on PBS, and it really does speak to what you said. I mean, when I watched it, I went, you've got to be kidding me. We all go back to that tribe and that species and look where we've come. I mean, and they had a way of really explaining it. I mean, talk about us coming from the earth. It's really pretty unbelievable. Go ahead.
It is. I mean, I think, you know, when we, you know, I think this is why we need to so much renew with nature, because actually as you get into, you know, I agree with you comments earlier about the garden, getting our hands on the soil and, you know, knowing where our water comes from. But even beyond that, it gets extraordinary when you realize, you know, that how the earth even came into being and the whole story of, you know, the evolution of our very existence. I think the more we touch into these bigger stories, it's so very profound. It can change how we are living on a daily basis and move us away from consumerism into much deeper senses of satisfaction than buying a new car or shoes, when we begin to realize the incredible wonderment that life is, and you know, how plants grow, how, as you were saying, you know, how we are all connected. I mean, these are hugely profound thoughts that can satisfy us in ways that you know, so many things in our current culture just can't do.
And one of the things that also is important when you speak, it makes me feel not afraid, because I don't think we need to go to a place of fear. There is an anxiousness that I think we should all feel, because we do have to hurry up. But I was up last week in Phoenix meeting with someone from the Nature Conservancy, and here's a perfect example of what your book says. So there are 4 million ponderosa pines that were in our area left on the planet, 4 million. 1 million of them have been burned in the last decade. Well, when I go there to the place of we've lost 25% of our ponderosa pines, I care about that. And I think most people do too. It's like, okay, so what are we going to do? Well, it's drought and it's forest fires and it's the, you know, the bark beetle. And you break it down so that I can find my connection with nature, because that activates the matrix. I don't know how else to put it. You start realizing that there is an unlimited supply, that we really do need to live more consciously, that what I do does make a difference. And somehow you magically wove that into the book in a helpful way. And I think people want help. Tell me what I can do. I want to make a difference. Please don't yell at me or make me afraid. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that, you know, as you know, I'm the founder and director of the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus.
Which I want to talk about, you know, for this segment. I really, really want to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a perfect segue. So I just thought we'd head in that direction, because, of course, dealing with the climate crisis, we come into this topic that you've just brought up many times, which is, you know, the scientists are telling us, and we can observe, that we are heading into some serious problems here. We are at tipping points that, you know, global climate change, it's not a distant warning. It's rapidly approaching us right now. And, you know, we're you know, in a time where we have the opportunity to prevent the worst impacts of climate change, but they're going to be lost very soon unless the global community changes our course very quickly. You know, so we have to live sort of in this unusual place of holding two apparently contradictory thoughts, which is we're in a terrible crisis, things are getting worse, we are destroying DNA, we are losing species very rapidly.
Quickly, yes.
Yes, you know, 200 species a day, and we are, you know, seeing a rise in global temperatures that is extreme. The ice caps are melting. We could go on. The devastation is shocking. And at the same time, if we lose our hope and our chance that we can do anything, it really can be something that immobilizes us.
True.
And we can't afford to go there, because while we still have a window to do the best that we can have maybe a softer landing versus a crash landing to the course we're on, I think it's worth fighting it out and doing everything we can. But it is very, very challenging, you know, and very scary. It just is. And I think what we're seeing, you know, in a lot of the work we do with women's organizations around the world and working with women on the ground in different countries is that it's very important that while we point out these crises, that we immediately point to action and immediately point to some of the solutions, because there are solutions everywhere. And I think that's one of the big frustrations, is that we actually have all the technology and solutions we need to, let's say, move to a clean energy economy. You know, we have the solar technologies, the wind, the all kinds of different innovations. And the fact is, we're not doing it. And I think that's the crux of the matter. Certainly what we're working on the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus, is how do we mobilize women all over the world really be a powerful force, a dynamic that can really demand this change, and quickly. Women have done this in many other movements, the Chipko movement in India, where women saved entire forests. They were sort of the original tree huggers. They held on to the trees. They wouldn't let the trees be cut. We've seen the suffrage movement. Women were a huge backbone to the civil rights movement. Women were key to the bringing peace to Liberia. And there's a huge rural women's movement, you know, with farmers all over the world. And I think it's not the only solution. It's not the only component. But I think bringing women together to bring hope, to really make demands on these solutions, and to speak forward about our love for the earth and future generations, is a voice that we need to uplift right now, and is very, very important. And again, addresses this thing of what can we do. We can really unite together and do what women have done forever, which is a sort of high-level networking and a holding of a space that is not better than men, but it's been missing. And when we add that ingredient back in, I think that it's going to accelerate a lot of these ideas and solutions and paradigm shifts that we're talking about.
And one of the things, and I said this to you off air, is that me finding my voice, which was through the airwaves, I so want to add to that and get your message out globally. There are places in the world that women are doing more than a lot of places in the United States, which you would not, that is kind of counterintuitive to me, but it's absolutely true. You recently did an event in Washington, D.C., and the flyer that I have, it says, Women of the Land Speak, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Tar Sands to Renewables. And just let me say, before you talk about that, what impressed me is the diversity of women's voices, from a 78-year-old farmer in Texas. This is not there's no stereotype for the type of women that are finding their voices. You have everyone from farm managers to really, you know, the indigenous women leaders from the indigenous people. So talk about that event and you're organizing it, and how it was and what the results were. Where are you going with it?
Oh, yeah, it was just really an extraordinary event. The event was the evening that followed the Tar Sands XL Pipeline rally that was earlier in the day, which was the largest climate rally in United States history, not in the world, but in the United States history, which was very powerful, put on by Sierra Club and 360.org.
Very powerful, yeah.
Yeah, and that was good. It was very, very good. I mean, somewhere of 50,000 people were there. And, you know, I just really want to honor all the organizers who did that. And then in the evening, the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus held an event with the leaders that you were talking about. We are forming a community of women who are from the tar sands and living on along its infrastructure, which is the pipeline coming through the U.S. And so we had Melina Massimo and Crystal Lehman, who are indigenous women who live right on the front lines. And, you know, their stories are, you cannot listen to them without bursting into tears, or at least getting teary-eyed, because...
So you know how I'd be.
Oh, it's just, it's extraordinary. I mean, indigenous communities and women along the pipeline are really taking the lead to stop the largest industrial project on Earth. And I know it's from northern Alberta, which is really ground zero, with over 20 corporations operating the tar sands, which is really becoming a sacrifice zone. You know, when they're done, it will be the size of the state of Florida. And it's just devastating, and it's destroying the cultural heritage, the land, the ecosystems, and the health of land-based communities. You know, they're in essence being sacrificed for, you know, oil money And it's just heartbreaking. And then we had, we wanted to do diverse panel. And so we also brought in, as you mentioned, these women from Texas, a 78-year-old grandmother, Eleanor Fairchild, who actually got arrested on her own property with the actress Daryl Hannah for trespassing on her own farm when they were putting the pipe in the ground. I mean, this, you know, tiny grandmother standing in front of these machines saying, you know, get off my land. I mean, really powerful. And a colleague of her, Julia Crawford, who's a farm manager who's also fighting the pipeline so it doesn't go on her property. And it was just amazing to hear their stories and to see the unity of the women really standing up for the land. And then our final speaker was speaking about renewable energies, because in a lot of our events, we think it's so important that when we say a gigantic no to something that we don't want, that we, again, as we were talking earlier, have to have a big yes. What do we want? And so there's a big conversation about, you know, how we can move to renewable energies at speed and scale with wind and solar and geothermal, and, you know, not being frightened that we can't do that. I mean, there's still going to be a transition period where we need fossil fuels. You know, we have to be very practical. But we can also move to these renewables much quicker than the general public realizes, and we need to keep educating people about that.
That's the truth. I mean, that's what I think we should press. That's the truth. We do have the technologies. They are being stopped by big money, by big lobbying, by big efforts. So we do have the technologies, and they are being slowed down. So we have to take another break. Notice I say we have to. Thank you to my sponsors that we do have to take a break is really what I should say, because without them, I could not be on this magnificent journey. We are interviewing today. I am interviewing Osprey Auriel Lake, author of Uprisings for the Earth, Reconnecting Culture with Nature. When we come back, I'd really like to talk a little bit more about the International Women's Earth and Climate Initiative, your online initiative that you're starting, and I'd like to read my final quote from your book that I have read many times. Please stay here with me, Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. I'm sure you won't want to move.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
Can academic research really save the planet? This year, the University of Arizona took full ownership of Biosphere 2. With five ecosystems enclosed in over 7 million cubic feet of sealed glass, Biosphere 2 is a premier facility for environmental research, where the top minds in the world will come together to address some of humanity's greatest challenges, such as climate change. Now that's using your brains. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Are you thinking about swapping out your old items for new? Think Habitat when you do. Don't trash it. Have a store it. Habitat for Humanity Tucson will resell your donated furniture, appliances, and building supplies and use the proceeds to build affordable homes in the greater Tucson area. Call now at 520-889-7200 for a free pickup. You can bring your donations to Habitat's Habit Store at 935 West Grant Road, just a quarter mile east of I-10. For more information, go to habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And every time I hear that bumper music, the boys are back in town. Well, the girls are here now. So boys, watch out. We're here. We're back. We're serious. And we mean business. Thank you for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. We have as our guest today, Osprey Oriel Lake, who is the author of Uprisings for the Earth, Reconnecting Culture with Nature. And as I've said in the other segments, this is just one of her many accomplishments. I hope we have time to get in a couple more of them. And I dare say, Osprey, this will not be your last appearance on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, so I don't have to try and cram it all in. Let's start by encouraging everyone to visit my website, to stay connected with me so that you can learn about the wonderful guests that I get to interview. It's MrsGreensWorld.com. If Facebook is your way to hear things, you can follow me on Facebook. I do a newsletter every other week, but you can all connect through one portal for me, MrsGreensWorld.com, and stay a part of my world because of all these great, wonderful, incredible people that I get to share with you. Osprey, let's start and try to end with your website so that people who are listening know how you can connect with the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus. And if they're driving and listening on their Droid or their iPhone, we can say it a couple of times so they might remember it, or then they'll download the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you so much for that. And congratulations to you, too, for all the work that you're doing and connecting us through your radio show and your website. And I think it's just so great to collaborate with you and know that you're out there bringing us all together.
Thank you so much. We've only just begun, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We're just gearing up here. So our website is, we have two different websites. One is for the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus, which is IWECC.org. And that's, you know, the main organization that I work with and founded, and it tells you all about our programs with our resilient community trainings. We do on-the-ground trainings here in the U.S. around water conservation, solar power, rights of nature, different ways to connect with our bioregion, and they're really exciting times to get together with women, and men also take our courses, which is really great as well, and learn about our advocacy work, the Women of the Land program, all the different projects we're engaged in, our advocacy at the United Nations. But what's exciting right now that we mentioned earlier in the program is we're right in the process right now of launching a new online solutions forum, and the website for that is very similar. It's IWECI.org. And of course, if you just look up Women's Earth and Climate Caucus, you're going to come across these.
Right.
And what we're doing right now as this week of International Women's Day is here right upon us is we're inviting women from all over the world to come have a dialogue with us online to learn about solutions, to share their stories specifically around climate change and sustainability solutions. And this is a lead up to a very large summit that we're having in September of this year, which you can read about on the site. It's 100 women leaders from around the world, like Dr. Vandana Shiva, Marina Silva from Brazil, Dr. Jane Goodall, Cristiana Figueres, who's the head of the United Nations climate negotiations, indigenous women from Canada, the ones I mentioned earlier on the show. And we're absolutely thrilled to bring grassroots women together with high-level policy women, with business leaders, to this summit to have, you know, a major conversation for 3.5 days about women's leadership in sustainability. And the way the Online Solutions Forum connects is that your voices, your ideas, all the women can enter information there that will be compiled into report that will be shared at the summit so that we're really collecting the best knowledge and wisdom from women who are working in these sectors and who care or just want to make a statement, that we can unify ourselves through this online portal and then share it real time with women who are in the field at the highest levels.
And where will that be on September 7th?
That will be in New York. It's positioned as a conference right before the United Nations General Assembly and the Clinton Global Initiative. It's a few days right before, on September 20th to the 23rd. And the plenary sessions will be live streamed so that when you go online to our site, you'll see that there's a way to sign up for Vision Hubs where you can just watch it in your home. But also, you know, different women around the world are going to create, you know, whether in their office or their homes, little Vision Hubs to watch together so you can see what's going on and also interact. It's going to be an interactive live stream where you can send in through Skype or email questions and interact with the speakers on the floor. You can see we're trying to make it as inclusive as possible and keep our carbon footprint down by not flying everyone everywhere and trying to do this sort of marriage of, you know, real life face-to-face meetings, but also involve people through the internet so we can be together but not all use up so much fossil fuel to meet.
And to me, the other part of that is not everybody can afford to fly to New York City from around the world. That's a really important piece of this whole concept that women think about. So there are populations of women that care just as much but might not have the financial means. And what I loved about your invitation to the world is anyone can access it. It's an open portal. It's not, you know, this level of people can come. It's going to be open. And to me, that is certainly new paradigm thinking. It's another thing that don't think much gets by Mrs. Green. It's like there's another aspect of this that's wonderful. Okay.
Well, thank you for recognizing that, because that's truly the effort, is to reach out to Indigenous and grassroots women. And as you say, you know, the women we work with in Africa and India, you know, they don't have the finances to come, but they should have equal access to what's
yes.
happening in their own communities and what's happening to their lives and their families.
And I, on the other hand, hope that I can come to one of them and fly and use some carbon offset somehow, which I don't even believe in, but I would love to. I so have to be there and connect at a physical level at some point. So I'm very excited about that and want to say on air, let's get you back on the show closer to that date so that we can talk about what's going to be happening there and highlight it and use our social media channels that are growing to connect more people globally. Okay, before we run out of time, and we do have quite a bit of time left, I want to talk about, I have to read this last paragraph because this is one that I really did call a lot of people about, and it's connected to all the work you do. At the center of an earth etiquette is deep, respectful listening. Knowing what to do comes from the listening. When we listen to the big quiet and feel the rhythm of our home planet, we become mindful that our survival is completely intertwined, people and planet. When we take a deep breath and allow for it, listening becomes again a part of our very nature, one that connects us with greater nature. That to me is my 5-star paragraph from your book, of which there were many, but everything you're doing to me has an underpinning of that message is connect, not just connect to the earth and to nature and to the birds and the hawk that was in my fountain today, but to each other in meaningful ways, including leaving your phone in your car when you go to lunch with someone and not be checking it. I mean, it's as simple as that, being present and listening to ourselves and then listening to other people. So that's my another way of just shouting out to you. And let's expand a little bit more on the work of Women's Earth and Climate Caucus, because it all stems from that, of getting people to yes, be really quiet and listen, because then they will love to talk about it.
Yes, yes, and thank you for bringing that forward. I mean, I think that, you know, I always tease with a lot of my colleagues, you know, they're like, well, what's going to come next? And, you know, where is the Women's Caucus going? And I say, well, I think I need to, there's a beautiful place that I go here in California. I grew up in the town of Mendocino, which is a very small town on the northern coast. And I'm now living more in the San Francisco Bay Area. And, you know, every 6 weeks or so, you know, I drive up there to stay on some friend's land and walk on the coast and be in the redwoods. And I tell them, you know, I'm not going to know till I come back from walking there what I'm going to do, because I need to go listen and find out myself.
Yes.
And that's a very real thing, you know, to come from a place, you know, and it's not always perfect, and I don't always do it, but it makes a huge difference when I do, to come from a much deeper place of getting past, you know, our own egos, getting past our own fears, getting past, you know, all the sort of petty things that can occupy our heads, and really search for, you know, what's the most authentic, honest, powerful, potent action I can do now? Where do I need to come from? And, you know, you sort of have to get through layers of all the fuss budgeting that we have to hear at that level, and not just with the land, as you say, but with one another. And when I find when I don't take that time, the work that I do or my connections with people is less. It's degraded. It's not at its highest form, because there's that huge relationship between the inner and outer world. And when we're not connected in that way, I think that we don't operate from our highest potential. And it's not a judgment. It's not a good or bad thing whatsoever. You know, there's times when we just don't have time to stop, and there's no judgment for that. That's not the point. You know, there's women I work with who have, you know, three kids, three jobs, and, you know, maybe they don't have the privilege or the leisure to stop in that way, and that needs to be honored. But it's still something that we can work with, even if it's, you know, late at night or looking outside the window and just catching a glimpse of a spring blossom, even just a split second of bringing us into a presence with the earth and with each other can make a difference. And I think that that's very important to us, because there's so much to do, but also what we do has to count. And I think that's what we're really looking for in these new paradigms.
And I can tell you that your book in no way, shape, or form comes across as judgment or harsh. It's a reminder. It's a reminder of something that's really deeply in us already. And you can go out and look at the moon at 2 o'clock in the morning, which I did the other night. It's like that's free. That's connecting. And then I was with someone, just a very quick meeting on a sidewalk, and I just looked around, and a tree is just starting to show the signs of spring. And I said, let's just stop for a minute. Look at this, effortlessly recreating itself, because the climate here is getting warmer and spring is about to spring into action. So those little things is so right. It's feeding your soul. How about, we have a you know, very, very few minutes left. How do people get your book, and how is it being received? I should have written a recommendation, a testimonial, but little did you know. So how is it being received, and getting a book out there, getting the word out there, which I hope this show does? How's that going? It's hard work.
It is, and thank you so much. And definitely, when we do the reprint, I'll be calling you for your endorsement.
Right now, say, this is what a tear looks like.
Oh, just I really appreciate your acknowledgement. Thank you so much. That's just so lovely. Well, you know, it's always a lot of effort to, you know, there's just so much out there, you know, to sort of rise out of all the activities and all the other wonderful books coming out. But I'm very thrilled that the book actually got an award, a Nautilus Book Award. So I'm very happy about that. It did get recognized in that sense. And you know, I've really enjoyed going on a book tour. It's very exciting to connect with people on these topics, because it's so pertinent to this moment. So that's very, very thrilling. And I feel also very excited that, you know, the book is really engaging people in a deeper dialogue. So in that sense, it's doing its work. And of course, all of us authors want our book to be out there more and translated into different languages and all of that. I'm still holding as, you know, something that I really look forward to happening. And shows like this are extremely appreciated.
Well, I'm holding the space for you, believe me. And I carry it around. And some of my girlfriends are like, oh my gosh, she's going to read a quote from that book again. And then they thank me. So I'm doing my part to spread the word and activating the matrix in every way that I can. Give us your website one more time, and then we are going to have to say goodbye until the next time.
Thank you so much. The website is iwecc.org. iwecc.org.
And I tell everyone that's listening, we get emails from people all the time saying, I missed it. You can send an email to Kelly at Mrs. Green's World. She's wonderful. I don't know what I'd do without her. Next week, our show is going to be another fun one, and you're not going to believe this. Jason Fields, the Urban Farming Guys. Talk about saving the urban farms. I look forward to that show. Osprey, thank you so much from a very deep level for what you're doing to preserve our planet. I am so blessed to have had this time with you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a true pleasure. Thank you, and good luck with all your good work.